Hey, so this is the last bit of content before the end of the day, and then we're going to go on to the fun part. The sun's coming out, we've got some drinks out just as well, so hopefully as many of you could stick around. Feel free to text your partners and let them know you're going to be late tonight. I'm not on brand, I didn't get the memo.
I wore my snazzy
one, I said. Yeah, it's good, I like it, it's like it. So I thought it'd be a good idea to summarise the earlier conversations in the day quickly. But firstly, please go ahead and introduce yourself, Chris.
Hi, everyone. So I'm Chris Twynin. I am the head of integrated media at Stone Island. Been in that role now about 7 months. Prior to that, I was in agencies for about 10 years.
Thanks. And we actually met one another when you were at Dentsu working with Kering.
Yep.
So I think it'd be interesting to talk about like your experience working with luxury brands and just a bit to add some more light on those experiences.
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually fell into luxury about 6 years ago. I was working on Dell, went away with some friends, came back. I was like, I can't do consumer tech anymore. It was driving me mad. So I said, go into something different, went into luxury. And I think in the last 6 years, it's been really enlightening to work on them brands. Obviously, they're held in such high regard and everyone always thinks, what's the right way to do luxury advertising? And there isn't really a right way of doing it, because even when you do the luxury things like the 100% takeovers and the 100% share of voice, is it the right way to advertise when you're overexposing people so much to your brand? So you have to tackle with a lot of the legacy beliefs of what is the right thing to do in luxury. And the other side to it as well is obviously they rely heavily on things like print and out of home, which is incredibly expensive to do, as most of you would know. So when you're trying to digitalize and transform those brands into a digital capacity, it is a real challenge, because you're dealing with people that have been in these brands for 20, 30 years or so. So yeah, it's about opening up. But now we see obviously luxury brands are opening up massively to new technologies and technologies we will talk about today as well. So yeah, it's about finding the sweet spot of respecting the past, but also understanding where the world is going. And yeah, it can be tricky with some of the people you deal with on the luxury side, for sure.
Thank you. My name is Raman Sidhu, Chief Strategy Officer at Alchemy. And I thought it'd be good to just summarize what Ben was talking about and also what Chorley did a great job moderating the last panel, just very briefly. And to simplify it, the way we could see ourselves is there's Web2 ad tech. Everyone knows what Web2 ad tech is. It's what you've been working with for the last 20-odd years. And the way we see ourselves is Web3 ad tech. It's a new infrastructure. And that new infrastructure has many benefits. So transparency is one of those, low fees and other outputs just as well, such as better impact to the environment. But that's, in many ways, the benefits of the infrastructure. And what we'll be talking about now going forward is when we build upon it, what does that mean for brands and how can they interact with Alchemy and from a creative and data perspective. But something which I wanted to summarize as well, what Laurie mentioned, when we talk around supply path optimization, it was a big part of the conversation before. We can compare the way supply path optimization has been done so far as SPO 2.0. And when we look at what we're providing at Alchemy, it's kind of like SPO 3.0. I wrote some words down. Effectively, we're making transparency programmatic. That's the difference in not having to go and stitch things along yourselves with lots of people to do that, to be able to do so through automation. And in doing so, making real-time programmatic financial transparency that's independent and immutable. And those last two words is important, because the independent in that we're not doing it ourselves, it's a network of blockchain-driven validators, and it's immutable because you can't go back in and change it. And that in many ways is how blockchain underpins Alchemy, and what we do on top is very exciting. So I wanted to talk to you about, not necessarily talking about media to start with, but what experiences have you had as a luxury brand working with blockchain? And you shared something, in fact, last week. Were you at VivaTech at the time? Or
I was supposed to be. I didn't go in the end. I wasn't able to. What I shared was, for me, super, super interesting. So 3 years ago, a couple of luxury groups, big ones, LVMH, Prada, and Richemont came together and they created the Aura Blockchain Consortium. And this was right at the time where everything was NFTs, obviously crypto was going to the moon, as they said, and we had the metaverse, and it was all the fun, glossy stuff on the front, but behind the scenes, this consortium was being set up, and being in the vertical I was in, I was like, interesting. So I've kept tabs on it throughout. And essentially what it is a network to create digital product passports. And what we mean by that is creating a digital twin of the physical product that you're buying. Again, NFT technology did that in a more fun and engaging way, like Nike have done it with .swoosh. Which is a good example. But yeah, I think what they've done is they've created basically an infrastructure to track the traceability of a product from its initial creation right through its lifespan, and also prove the authenticity of things, right? I think in luxury, we know that the dupes market now is worth something like $4 trillion, I think, in the world. So I think, yeah, it's now able to actually prove that something's authentic. Now, if you look at what luxury brands have done in the past, and what I'm wearing is a good example, it has a tag in it to prove its authenticity. If you go through on those QR codes, 9 times out of 10, those UXs and the user experience that sits behind those QR codes feels like it's like a WordPress website from 2006. So what Aura's now done is created a much more consumer-friendly and B2B-leaning infrastructure for these brands to prove traceability, authenticity, and more importantly for us in the room, the next wave of CRM. Like, being in a brand now and kind of being exposed to what CRM is, we do some really kind of old school things, right? Like, we create special edition tote bags and zines to get people into store to collect their data, to then put them into the CRM, to have them as customers and engage with them. It's really old school. Like, it works, but it's old school. But with the new form of kind of things like Aura that operate on a blockchain, you can buy a product, you can scan it, you can add it to your wallet in your phone, so it actually has a card there with, say, your Visa. And you can engage with that person. You can touch in with them on a one-to-one level because of the one-to-one that you have with their product and the digital twins. So there's these new forms of CRM, as an example, that are coming out of this space, which is extremely exciting for marketers. Again, we're seeing the deprecation of cookies, we're seeing signal loss, et cetera, et cetera. How do we glean first-party data in a web-free world? And it's this type of thing. It's like a very user-friendly experience, and I implore anyone to go have a look at it because it's interesting and it is going to be something these brands lean more into. One more point. They've put 40 million products now onto this chain. It's a lot of products. So you think everyone that's buying those products can scan, authenticate, and they're into Aura's blockchain consortium at that point of engagement. So yeah, it's interesting.
From a media perspective, what that is effectively is a replacement for measurement. It's powered by a Web3 wallet. And in many ways, we see a Web3 wallet as a replacement for the cookie. It's just going to take some time to get there. You might have remembered Ben's graph to show where we are in terms of wallet adoption specifically. Now, we don't necessarily all need to download a wallet to be using one. There are a lot of products powered by those wallets, such as Aura. There's also Adidas's Confirmed app. You might have come across that. And that allows you to basically buy drops from Adidas, but then it also gets lots of people to engage with limited edition drops that not everyone's going to have the opportunity to buy, but people could enter a raffle to do so. It's also got loyalty built into that. And I think that's quite interesting when we think about loyalty, measurement, and then targeting all tied as one, but something that is not run by an ad tech company, something is not promoted by a B2B company, something that's owned by the individual and has privacy at its heart.
I think another interesting point as well with the example I gave was by 2026, I think there's legislative change that says you have to have a digital product passport twinned with product because of the sustainability of an item. So it's important, obviously, in that part of the world and having that circularity. But from a marketer's perspective, this is great news because they're going to exist and they're going to be a necessity for brands to engage with. So LVMH and these other luxury brands that have built this consortium are ahead of the curve. No doubt that Nike, Adidas, all these big conglomerate brands will get involved with that because, A, they need to, and B, they understand that it's the next wave of that level of engagement to bring new customers in.
How do you see that digital twin being used in other ways as opposed to like proof of ownership?
Yeah, I think there's lots and lots of user cases for it. I think reward-based systems, you briefly mentioned them, what Adidas is doing. I think if you have a digital twin, you could potentially reward those customers for repeat purchase, right? Like a VIC program that brands typically have where, say, for Stone Island, when you bring those customers in, they get first access to new collections, they get to meet the design team to understand the collection better. Because if people don't know, just a brief bit on Stone Island, most people here probably think about football, casual culture, but actually the innovation, the material innovation that goes into these products is incredible. Our real loyal customers love that side of the brand. So for them to be able to engage with that is part of why they love the brand. And if you're able to build that type of system into some sort of wallet functionality where you reward them with that access, they're going to want to engage with it more and more and more and do more. The other user case I really love is on the gaming side. So obviously from a gaming perspective, next year is going to be an incredibly important year with GTA 6 coming out. There's already been a lot of leaks, but the rumors about them having a wallet in-game that will link to the real world, and you can update that with things that you own in the real world to put into the game, like all those types of functionalities that are going to come out of that. So I think what's stopping this type of technology existing in a game where you engage with an ad, you get rewarded, and it adds something to a physical, to a digital wallet that can be redeemed for physical goods. That whole kind of flywheel effect that you get from these types of technologies, there's no kind of limit right now unless there's not a hunger from these brands to do it. And also people like Rockstar game developers, if they don't want to do it. But I imagine they will get there.
Yeah, it's pretty cool to have a Stone Island jacket as your avatar on Grand Theft Auto. So the next subject around the advertising experience, and I'm going to draw again on the work we did previously at Kering and my understanding of luxury brands. You mentioned this earlier on, a lot of budget gets spent on a luxury brand buying up all the ads on a page, or I saw it in by our office the other day, Loewe has bought up all the outdoor ads just as well. And that's called 100% share of voice, 100% share of screen. You mentioned the other day whilst we were talking that that isn't something that you necessarily think is a great idea. Can you elaborate on that, please?
Yeah, I briefly touched on it earlier. I think there's already tons of wastage in the ad ecosystem, as we all know, right? And obviously, these guys are doing a lot to tackle that. But I think the example I gave earlier, if you're doing 100% share of voice on a page, say on the FT, you're buying up like four ad slots on a page, you're probably paying, what, 50, 60 quid CPM. What? Like, it's crazy when you think about the money that's going on it. So for me, I think this is the bit I mentioned with luxury brands. You're tackling legacy beliefs of how luxury advertising should work.
Yeah.
Whereas actually, if you think about frequency control, optimizing your supply so that you get the access to the stuff you need at the cost it should be, not paying for the commissions and all the on-tops that you have to pay at the upfront, there's so many things that luxury brands aren't quite there yet with. But one thing that's important with those types of brands, and many of you probably engage them on a day-to-day, is that some of the people that operate in those worlds aren't traditionally media people as well. They come from a marketing background and stuff. So it takes a lot to distill it for them to understand exactly what you're trying to put in front of them, which I think I've become a bit of an expert at. I think, like, just to distill it down to the absolute minimum requirement to sell it in. But yeah, I think that's something that has always been a challenge. And to your original question, what can we do to change that? I think by obviously educating them first and foremost when it comes to this type of technology, but also showing them the savings, right? Like, if you can show these brands, groups like LVMH, they may look fun from the outside, but inside it's numbers, man. So like, you have to be sure to be showing them that you're saving, that you're being cost effective in how you do things. And if you can show them that versus 100% share of voice, I imagine you'll start to see a bit of a behavior change pretty soon.
Yeah, it's quite interesting because we've been working over the last 9 months or so building out solutions on top of the exchange. One of those solutions is sequential advertising. So it's like 100% share of screen on steroids, so to speak. It's also a great solution for cookie deprecation. And it allows us to tell a story on a single page. So effectively allow an awareness ad to come first, product description second, and lastly call to action. And as it's all underpinned by the blockchain, we know exactly how many ads someone has seen just as well, and where they are in that story. As we could connect that to identifiers such as the wallet, we could continue that story on elsewhere on another screen too. And it's all done programmatically, which means you don't need to call up publishers individually and buy direct off them.
Welcome to my world.
And we could basically do it programmatically, which means the cost is driven down just as well and bought on an impression level on a bit of content level. So we're getting contextually relevant audiences rather than block buying over time.
Yeah, absolutely. I think sequencing as a concept isn't new. Like some of you may have done it with YouTube, right? Where you start with a 15 second, you then move on to the 60 second and you sequence that way. But being able to do that in a single session as opposed to the repeat session, all these brands want to create that brand universe and that brand storytelling. So it's an interesting concept to be able to like feed them down that storytelling route in a single setting. The point I make about 100% share of voice earlier, it isn't that. It's using the same asset over and over again just to blast it, right? And does it work? I don't know. I don't think so. It works on a spreadsheet, of course, but it doesn't necessarily work when you think about everyone here, like how many banners have you clicked on in the last like 10 years? Do you know what I mean? Like if you use the banners in a setting of storytelling, it could work quite well.
I think it's also when we look at it from a retargeting perspective, a lot of the reason for retargeting is to be able to tell someone the next point of that story. So if you could do it all in one interaction, it effectively allows you to tell your entire brand story, but using different bits of creative and assets to do so. And is there any other examples in terms of creative examples that you're seeing to improve the brand and ad experience?
Yeah, do you know what? From a like digital setting perspective, obviously there's always the platforms changing the rules around what you can put into an ad, like the weight of it, like the functionality. I remember back in the day, Blipper, where you had the gyroscope in the phone and you could make it really interactive. Like we lost a lot of functionality as time's gone by. I think for me, like when you think about different types of things that you're seeing online now, so at the top of an article, you see the bar that basically allows you to listen to the article. I've seen a couple of examples where brands are having pre-roll loaded into those, so you have to listen to like a 15-second ad before you go into the explanation of the page. And if you think, and I know we're going to go into it, but like things like AI descriptions and scanning something and it telling you back, and obviously Google moving into the visual AI piece as well with ads, there's a really interesting world in which I think pre-roll being able to kind of piggyback off of some of those types of new experiences could be quite interesting as well. And because I haven't got the time to read a 10-minute article, I'd rather listen to it. I'm willing to listen to a 30-second ad or watch a 30-second ad before I have to read out or listen to the rest of the article, basically. So I think that could be quite a nice way of taking some of what's worked in the past for us and also using some of this new technology to serve more personalized ads to people before they listen to something as opposed to having to read it.
That's nice. I think you mentioned AI. Good point to move on to that subject. There's a lot of people talking about AI, and it is the topic du jour right now. How do you see it fitting into your business? I know we've discussed this in the past where I mentioned to yourself that there was a conversation that I heard between Peter Thiel, and he was talking around, I think, mathematicians versus talkers. And what AI is more likely to replace faster. So in the next 3 to 5 years, it's easier for AI to effectively replace a lot of work that mathematicians are doing. But it's a lot harder for AI to be replacing creatives, talkers, people who explain things. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think we've obviously spoken before about a couple of examples that was at Viva Tech last week. Dior had a really great example of using AI to visualize salience and conversation around the brand. And we've all seen those platforms that scrape it and feed you back. But this is looking in absolute real time what's going on across the web, across social, about their beauty brands. Like beauty, looking at salience of beauty is quite a difficult thing to do in a conversational way on social. So they're using it in that way. And that's really interesting for us as advertisers because we've all been there, we've all sat in cross-tab analysis to look at a report from 18 months ago about what our brand perception is. I'm like, oh my God, like surely we're going to get past that. And we are getting there. These brands are doing that. I think on the more magician creative side, what I think is really interesting there is like you take a brand like Stone Island. So we've just after 17 years in January, we've rolled out a new campaign. Campaign as a form of research. We've worked with a guy called Ferdinando Videri, who rebranded Prada into the success story it is now. And you think about the money that is being spent on production, on getting talent, on the shoots that you have to bring all the talent to. Like, it's a lot of money. If you think what AI represents as an opportunity there is you capture the, like, let's say, the Jason Statham of the world who we had in our campaign in one look. We then use this technology to superimpose every other look onto him. So we don't have to have Jason isolated in a single look. We can have him across all of our sub-collections, can have him across every color variation. And then you take, obviously, like what you could do there with out of home, digital six sheets, you could dynamically insert that image with the look via AI into these different places. The opportunity is really endless. Like, you know the Million Ads podcast studio where they can dynamically serve? I think if you take some of what we're talking about with creative production, with some of the good stuff we have in advertising that's still legal, you can create something really powerful. And I think what you'll start to see is a lot of these brands, not just fashion, like non-endemic as well, start to use this technology just to have the ability to reduce production but increase your exposure to this to create something really powerful. Actually, at VivaTech, the LVMH Innovation Award went to a company called Fancy Tech that created the AI-based innovation to have 80 different versions of a Hublot watch, I think it was, or a Tag, one of the two. But they won the award. It was an AI creative company that won the Innovation Award this year. Last year was at Sustainability Tech. This year it was AI Creativity. So it's obviously here to stay.
I had a look at that. It's very cool. And in many ways, ad tech's been doing AI for quite some time. It's kind of like dynamic creative optimization that we've been doing without the generative piece. Yeah. So bringing that generative piece in would be making potential unknowns. How do you look to potentially kind of retain that generative piece within your brand guidelines and the way you want it to look and feel?
Yeah, that's the challenge, right? It's if anyone's ever worked on a brand side, I think one of my biggest learnings from the last 7 or 8 months has really been like legal protection, brand safety and suitability teams are like on your ass about every little thing. So we're a long way off what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the utopian world of doing one shoot and then being able to put every product on it. But a lot of things have got to come together in that world for it to feel right and for it to work. The fidelity and the capture of the item, like how do you capture this in a 3D setting so that it moves and the light? It's a really good example with me glistening. When you move around, like capturing it in the right way in a 3D capacity, I think those types of things have got to get to that point where they feel right and a brand looks at it and is like, it's perfect. It can pull off our feed, like the catalog pulls it in, done. Like I think we're a couple years away from that, but we best believe your Amazons, your Metas, your TikToks, they're all working behind the scenes to get to that point so that it's super, super straightforward. Plug that into Advantage Plus, into PMax, Bosch, you're away. We're not gonna need a lot of different solutions, which is sad, I hate that, but that's the world we're getting to, I think.
Yeah, from an e-commerce perspective, definitely. From a brand perspective, I would imagine it differs slightly in terms of how you want to tell your brand story. There's something that we've been doing at Alchemy as well in terms of AI. So we've been talking about Alchemy a lot as an exchange. And over the last year, we've been building out our own DSA, we call it, a demand-side agent, the agent bit being AI. And one of the applications is to allow people to buy directly using our platform, but also doing so through a prompt-based AI system to allow us to feed in briefs where we could respond to those briefs to yourselves very fast. So for us, it's around being a better partner, being more reactive, but whilst doing so, also making your jobs a lot more efficient just as well. So we certainly think there's a future for AI and how blockchain can use AI. There's a lot of interesting examples which we look forward to talking about in months to come and releasing on top of the Alchemy platform.
Paid media might be a challenge, but I think the example I used of like in-game in terms of your twin being accessible in a gaming capacity, Roblox have introduced in-game advertising. I suppose other worlds will do it. You engage, that then realizes you've got that product associated to a wallet, then target that wallet back with maybe a reward, a loot box item, something like that. Like, gaming now is still very much in its infancy, right? Like, you look at a Roblox game and it's... I want to get behind what they're doing with gaming, but it's still like, oh, like, am I going to stop whilst I'm being chased by someone in a game to watch a 15-second ad? Probably not. But there's going to be a world in which AI comes in and you have NPCs, non-playable characters dotted around the game that are preloaded with a brand message, and you engage them. They give you the 15-second pitch or whatever it is. You unlock, you pass it back into your wallet, whatever you unlock, and et cetera. That is really interesting. And we're not far off that either. Like, role-playing games always have been powered by AI, but not in a brand capacity. Now we're getting into the branded bit of it, where you could have like a running expert from Nike telling you about something in-game that you could then pass back into some sort of wallet, redeem it in store. It's about like omnichannel, right? We talk about omnichannel all the time. Omnichannel, omnichannel, omnichannel. But actually, like, we're not there because all of the pipes don't quite work together yet. But when we get to this world of like having a form of digital passport that you can move around and have that interoperability, I think we'll get to a world where it all just starts to be a bit more seamless. It's if the lawmakers get in the way of it. But yeah, we'll see. The in-game one now is like a brand energy piece. It's not beyond that. Like, it's a, for the last 3-4 years, it's been a headline more than anything, right? To see, like, Gucci, I was working on at the time, and we were talking about it earlier, like, Gucci Vault was like an offset of Gucci that was there to experiment in Web3, innovative technologies and gaming. And the gaming piece they were doing at the time was incredible because they were just trying all these new spaces, but no one's ever been able to say, that's how I tie it back to an attribution model. Does MMM fix some of that, maybe? I don't know. Like, I'm still a little bit like that with MMM. I don't know what's quite under the hood. But yeah, you probably will get into a world where it has to be attributed in some way or another. And again, having a form of identity tied to that environment could help with the attribution piece for sure. Like I mentioned briefly, just like the brand energy bit. For us, when we've done these projects in the past, it's like making sure that you're fueling the top of the funnel. Apologies for saying it, but that's what it is, right? You're like bringing new opportunities and prospects to people you haven't previously engaged. I think the other bit as well is like, when you look at brand lift studies and things like that, like, has someone been exposed to your brand? We did one for Burberry with Twitch. It was a good example. Like, basically during COVID, obviously all the fashion shows were happening online, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube dominated. We went to Burberry with a proposal for Twitch, which was shooting up at that point. It's kind of flatlined a little bit now, but at the time it was going gangbusters. And what we said to them was, give the potential of this gaming environment to the user for them to interact and create the show they want to see. So we turned a traditional gaming environment where people were going and watching hours of Roblox into something where it was very premium. People could watch the show from like 5 different angles and that type of thing as well. So it's about understanding the functionality of these gaming environments that offer you something that you can't get in a traditional setting, I think, as well. Like, and again, COVID, like now, when you look back on it, the user cases were amazing. There were so many cool user cases, and it seems to have flatlined a bit because of needs of every other business and wider macro setting. But yeah, it was about understanding the functionality of a platform so well that you could reward the customer by allowing them to view something that typically was so highly produced and only the creative director could say, this is how you're going to watch it. But actually, you could watch this from multiple different angles. We saw incredible uptick. We got 500,000 concurrent viewers at that time. It was the highest view that month on the platform. And brands tried to replicate it, and they couldn't because it was just lightning in a bottle. So there's a lot of that in this gaming world as well, of like, it's hard for them to understand beyond like one brand doing it, how to continue that success as well. It's a challenge.
And I know agencies are doing a lot of education that gaming is a new channel. So the way I hear it from some agencies, kind of senior heads of innovation, is that there's social, there's CTV, and then there's gaming. From our perspective, it's around changing the infrastructure, which has had no innovation for the last 25 odd years, which has been built up like Lego blocks, rather than thinking about it holistically. And as a result, the cost to advertisers, a large percentage of their media budget goes towards that infrastructural layer. So when you think about the innovation within that, effectively allowing advertisers to have more of their media budget going towards the publishers, saving them more money for less money, getting better performance, and the publishers making more money as well. And that's what we see as the innovation, because effectively it's all about creating the longevity of the open internet. And from our perspective, our latest product release on that front is the sequential advertising. So to be able to tell a full brand story, but knowing what was the last ad that someone saw and doing so without any identifiers required. So being able to deliver awareness, product descriptions, and calls to actions in one interaction. That is currently not available. And the closest thing that I could think about to that is retargeting, which is disappearing. So we're solving for the retargeting problem without having any identifiers and doing so in a single interaction where it's more meaningful, where you're going to capture more attention.
And it's also just really bloody hard at the minute because things are in such a shit state. But way I've always done it with our, when I was on agency side in particular as well, is like 70-20-10 has always been like rule of thumb, right? 70, that's what we're going to do well for you. 20 is going to be those smaller incremental tests in platform and doing that. 10% we've always said, and for all the brands I've worked on, is like that 10%, use that for pure innovation and test and learn and have some case studies that can be taken back in-house. Because now being on the brand side, CEOs, CMOs, they love to be able to share that thing with internal parties, with external parties. So it ticks a big box from a PR standpoint, but it also does move the needle and we push things along. And I've had the luxury, excuse the pun, of working with the big groups that have the big budgets. Now I'm in a smaller brand with the smaller budgets. We have to be very precise about what that test is going to deliver for the brand. I'm lucky the brand I am at now is an innovative brand in the sense of they have, throughout their 42-year lifespan, have been extremely innovative. So you get lucky. But yeah, it's about taking that small piece of the pie and actually just chucking it at the wall and see if it sticks. And if it doesn't, move on.
It's a good note to end on. Thank you. We have a few slides. So here's the team. I'm sure a number of you have met them already, but if you haven't, we've got drinks going on afterwards. We're going to clear this room, and it's going to be reset into a cooler party atmosphere in about 20 minutes, so we could come back in here and have some drinks out there in the meantime. We host a number of events to better educate our clients around blockchain Web3 ads, but doing so with wine. So doing a wine tasting to talk around the old world of wine and how we're moving over to the new world, and why it tastes better. So we host these smaller kind of, I guess, workshop sessions for specific teams. So feel free to reach out to us if you want to get involved. In fact, these cards that were on your seats, they've got a QR code on them. And you could register for any one of our events, which include Web3 and Wine, and also Ads and Abs. So this is for the fitness junkies out there. Once a month, we have a group session where in the morning we do have a personal trainer and invite anyone who's interested along to train with us. Thank you very much. Thanks for coming. And we look forward to chatting further.